Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. On March 23, 2020, the transition under the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act was complete, allowing products formally classified as small molecule drugs, including all insulin products, to be approved under the Biologics Regulatory Pathway. This week on the podcast, we're speaking with Kate Lockhart, the Executive Director of the Biologics and Biosimilars Collective Intelligence Consortium, also known as the BBCIC, about the acceptance process for biosimilars in the United States, what BBCIC is doing to help the market develop, and how this transition will impact the market and uptake efforts. So, Kate, let's start by having you tell us a little more about the BBCIC.
So BBCIC is a very true multi-stakeholder consortium. We have participants from pharmaceutical manufacturers, both reference product, originator product, and biosimilar manufacturers. So it's a combination. We have payers, we have other researchers, we have integrated delivery networks, we have patient organizations, physicians. So we really try to cover all the stakeholders. And the research, anybody who's participating in BBCIC can propose a research study. The research studies are evaluated and prioritized by the science committee, where everybody has a seat, everybody has a voice. And that's how we decide our research agenda, is by committee, by all the participants in the consortium. So that's how we decide what products we study. So it's a very unique structure.
What are you guys doing research-wise for biosimilars, and what sort of answers are you seeking?
So BBCIC is one of my favorite topics, so I'm always happy to talk about that. BBCIC is dedicated to generating real-world evidence in a post-marketing setting for biologics, including biosimilars, to give people the tools that they need to make the decisions that they feel are best from a treatment and coverage standpoint. We are a neutral convener of multiple stakeholders across all of the stakeholder groups. We have representation from all the stakeholder groups, and our focus is real-world evidence. So we're looking to answer questions about what happens with these products, what happens when these products get into the hands of real people, and how can that influence the utilization. But we're here to provide the data. We're here to provide the evidence so that other people can make the decisions as they see fit and use our data in that capacity. We're also supporting the research community with some methodological and infrastructure studies to help advance and pave the way for more real-world evidence to come into play.
Now, from what I understand, you guys are also conducting a study on long and intermediate acting insulins. What are your objectives here?
We have some interesting projects in process or in planning. One is in insulins. We're looking at long and intermediate acting insulins to do some comparative work on what happens with people in terms of their treatment and their outcomes and their health status based on their treatment patterns using originator reference insulins versus biosimilar insulins. And so with the number of patients with diabetes in the United States, I think this could be a really important public health research to answer some questions about what's happening, depending on what product you're using. We're also in the planning stages of conducting some switching analyses, which I've had some conversations and heard from people that understanding switching, particularly from a clinic management standpoint, how can we better understand the implications of switching from one product to another and back or in whatever combination. The reason for some of their concern, if you're a clinic that treats patients with a variety of coverage from a variety of different health plans, then depending on their coverage, you might need to stop biosimilar A and biosimilar B and reference product A. And so then all of a sudden your logistics or the infrastructure within your clinic become much more challenging and potentially more expensive. And so some of the clinicians and the clinics are interested in knowing if a patient comes in on one product, is it okay that we are covering a different one? Those are not questions that we're going to be able to answer really quickly, but I think that'll be a big support to the decision makers out there. And then a third study that we're in the middle of is doing a full-scale comparative effectiveness and safety study in G-CSF products, particularly the filgrastims, because we see a lot of use of the biosimilar products that are available as well as the reference product. So stay tuned.
What's the importance of monitoring real-world outcomes from biosimilar use?
another potential side effect, at least temporary, from this policy change will be to understand the transition period. There's a number of products out there that are regulated under one category under an NDA that will now be regulated under a BLA. And there's bound to be some confusion and some lack of clarity around what that means for each of those products and for each of those manufacturers. So I think there's bound to be a little bit of confusion. This is not new. We've been anticipating this rule for a while, but when you're anticipating something for a while, it's easy to just wait until it happens before you really have to understand. And so we'll see. Time will tell, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a good change.
How does real-world evidence figure into the acceptance process for biosimilars?
We're in a little bit of a chicken and egg situation here because people want this information. People are interested in finding out what happens in the real world, in real clinical settings with these products, so that they'll feel comfortable in using them. But in order for us to do that research, people have to be using them. So it's, you know, it takes some people who are comfortable with that. So our interest is in, I wouldn't say continual surveillance, I would say periodic. I think it's possible that once we do a study and come out with the data, whatever the data say, are of treatment outcomes and treatment patterns, you know, safety, effectiveness, all of those variables that we're interested in, once we do that study, do we need to do more? I don't know. I think it'll depend on the product. But rather than continual surveillance, I would say it'd be more episodic at most. Now, that said, we are doing monitoring utilization patterns in the U.S. of multiple products. And these are just simple analyses that we're doing regularly for 6 products right now to understand, number one, the percent utilization of a variety of products across a disease state. And we get some demographic and some clinical information about the patients who are using them as well. And so it gives us a nice snapshot, partly to help us plan future research, but also gives, I think, a unique view of what's happening out in the marketplace, not in real time, but at least over time.
What has to happen to develop the market further, improve access, and to bring more competition and application from manufacturers?
I think there still is a ways to go to really have a mature biosimilars market in the United States. And that's going to take a few things. There's some clear barriers that we are still experiencing. One is that we're starting to get better about is the rate of approvals, as well as the rate of market launch of products. Those are not necessarily the same things these days. But I think there still is uncertainty among prescribers, patients. There's a lot of uncertainty in terms of reimbursement and payment, which is somewhat unique in the United States because of the nature of our healthcare system. So there's still work to be done before there's wide acceptance. Our utilization rate of biosimilars is still quite low, even though we have products available now. So I think we need people who are continuing to be passionate about this and understanding the importance of it. It takes a long view of the healthcare system to really understand their value and to really respect the value that biosimilars can bring to the market.
Now, a major part of this March 23rd transition is that products that were originally approved using new drug applications, or NDAs, will now be approved using biologic license applications, or BLAs. Can you discuss more about this transition's potential for spurring the development of insulin drugs and other biologics? What do you anticipate here?
I think the March 23rd switch, BLA, NDA, it's so hard to tell. I don't claim to be able to predict the what happens based on regulatory decisions, but on the surface, I think it's going to provide some clarity. I think it's an excellent step that the FDA has made in providing better definition of what is a biologic and helping people to understand how they are regulated and how the approvals are going. So I think it's a better categorization that they're doing. I think it'll open up the door to potentially some new players. I've heard of some new players in the insulin space coming in as a result of these guidances that the FDA has put out. I'm hopeful that it will provide the clarity and the way that people need and a roadmap to enter into the biosimilars market.
Well, Kate, thank you for joining us today and sharing your insights. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes, and until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.